I actually feel much more strongly than the title indicates. Antibacterial cleaning products do create health problems, but we're in a scientific community, and I'm trying to be reasonable. I want to tell you up front what I'm going to tell you in case I run out of time. Cleaning products are associated with asthma. This is actually a widespread problem, and the hazards have been unrecognized in a lot of places where they need to be recognized. Among the hazardous ingredients are disinfectants, but I'll tell you a little bit about some of the others, and that we're being sold a bill of goods. Promotion of disinfectant products and inclusion in cleaning has been pushed by the manufacturers and being adopted by a lot of people who are telling us to use them inappropriately. And then I want to tell you a little bit about one story where cleaning products were changed as a result of some collective effort. So cleaning products are actually more complicated than you might expect. They include a variety of different ingredients. Surfactants make up the biggest ingredient in cleaning products. But, you know, if you're going to worry about cleaning products, it's the solvents, it's the aerosols, the disinfectants, which I'll say more about, and the fragrances, which tend to be the most hazardous ingredients. So in the United States, 3 million people are employed in cleaning occupations, but in fact, exposure is much more pervasive than that. In a survey in California, people were asked, were you in contact with cleaning products today, and 26% reported yes. My colleagues who do NIOSH-funded pesticide surveillance have published on the adverse effects of disinfectants in retail and among teenagers at work. In fact, with cleaning products, we have the additive work and home exposures, and that, in fact, cleaning products show up not just in workplace records of adverse effects, but poison centers. In the Massachusetts and Rhode Island Poison Center, cleaning products account for many of their adverse incidents. And even nationwide, cleaning products tend to be second or third in the AAPCC database, which is the database of all poison centers. I'll say more about that last one later. How do cleaning products work? You got to know how they work so then you can do a better job making them better. It's those surfactants that really make a difference. Cleaning products tend to have a water-hating end and a water-loving end. Those little ends surround the dirt and lift it up into solution and wash things away. So in other words, cleaning itself can be accomplished with those surfactants, which I think are some of the less hazardous ingredients. So if we know how they work, we can really understand better how to improve people's workplace exposures. So NIOSH funds 4 states to do surveillance of work-related asthma. Massachusetts is one of those 4, along with California, Michigan, and New Jersey. So I got involved with this because I work at the Massachusetts Department of Public Health, and we do surveillance of work-related asthma. So, you know, starting in 1993, we started collecting these cases of work-related asthma. And so from 1993 to 1997, we looked at, well, let's look at all of our cases in the 4 states of work-related asthma. And it turned out that 12% of the cases associated their asthma with cleaning products. And very often, they didn't know exactly which cleaning product or what it was. This is with right to know. I mean, these are things we should know. Well, then NIOSH took another look at the data, and they looked at one kind of work-related asthma. RADS is Reactive Airways Dysfunction Syndrome. It's asthma, in our definition, that persists for at least 3 months, but started from one acute exposure. And sure enough, Paul Hennenberger found, in, again, the same four states, that in RADS cases, cleaning materials were the leading cause of the RADS cases. Well, then we took another look at the data, and we looked at healthcare workers. And again, same 4 states over 5 years, 1993 to 1997. And 16% of our cases were healthcare workers. Look at that. Once again, the leading exposure that was associated with work-related asthma among healthcare workers were cleaning products. Again. it turns out the United States is not the only place where these kinds of findings have been found. There have been studies in, this is a study in Spain, and this was domestic cleaners. In Brazil, there have been at least two studies. The most recent one this year, this was looking at non-domestic cleaners. All right, there was a study in Finland comparing cleaners to administrators. Here was another study in Spain. This was cleaning workers were 1.7 times more likely to have asthma than office workers. Then there was a review article by Nazarov in 2004 looking at 26 papers, compelling evidence implicating cleaning as a problem. Then there was another review article in 2006 by Ken Rosenman. And then there was a study that just came out last month by Zach. And this is another interesting one because, you know, we've been looking mainly at work-related asthma and at workers. Zach's study, which was very large, many countries in Europe, found that the more that people used aerosol cleaning products at home, the more likely they were to get asthma. This was adults. Well, think about the implications. Once again, workers are the sentinels for exposures to children. And yet in the childhood asthma community, they're not talking about cleaning products. I want to go over this quickly. I just want to let you know there are some ongoing research efforts in California and Massachusetts, one at UMass Lowell. They're looking at another ingredient, 2-butoxyethanol, but they're finding things. They're trying to quantitate exposure, and they're actually finding that some of these chemicals stay in the environment for a while. It takes a long time to come back to background. So here we got this complicated thing. We got these individual ingredients that might be hazardous, not just asthma. You know, there are a number of products that are carcinogens, neurotoxins. You have the toxicology of the individual ingredients. You have flammability. You have the likelihood that it might evaporate. You have the way it's used. I've told you about aerosols. You have the hazard rating of the whole product. Does it perform? There's certainly a lot of evidence out there about environmental harm from cleaning products. So what's happening, though, as we're looking at cleaning products, we're in fact being told that we're not cleaning enough. You know, here's an ad that says, just because a surface looks clean doesn't mean the germs are gone. You know, the message here is that even if you're cleaning, you're not doing enough, that we have to add something to those cleaning products. And these are two pictures from the recent MRSA incidents. This is a school. There have been some cases of community-acquired methicillin-resistant Staphylococcus aureus, MRSA, or superbug. And this shows that, you know, you've got to, like, clean the tops of the lockers because that's where some of those bugs are hiding. And this is one of my favorites. I don't know if you read Parade magazine. This came out October 14th. It was in the Boston Globe and many other papers. This was a news supplement, and it was all about how you have to clean. This was a 16-page, again, no advertising, it was a news supplement that promoted disinfection and cleaning, and it was filled with pictures of beautiful children and clean surfaces. And so once again, it's showing you that even if you're cleaning, you are not protecting your children. 9 out of 16 pages were advertisement. And in case you missed it, in the Parade magazine, there was also another picture of a beautiful child, sponsored by Walmart, to make sure you buy your disinfectant. And this is one of my favorites, startling news about your underwear. Beware of your dirty underwear. Just touching it could make you sick. I got this off the internet. I couldn't make this up. And then, you know, this was, again, another reminder with all the MRSA. You know, some of the early cases of MRSA were coming up in athletes. And so, I mean, this, they're making it funny, but this is germicides and saying don't spray your athletes. So this is it's a bad slide, but let me tell you this story. So in summer of 2006, SEIU 615, a union that represents cleaning, custodial, janitorial workers, were getting some reports from their members who clean at Logan Airport. And they were getting reports from the folks who work on midnights that they were having all sorts of health problems, nosebleeds, stomach aches. So the union wanted to do something, and they went to MassCOSH, the Massachusetts Coalition for Occupational Safety and Health, and they asked for some help. And they described these conditions. The supervisors were mixing chemicals to make them stronger. It was midnight, so they were using their best and strongest cleaning products. And they were doing things that put the workers at risk. And MassCOSH was in a really good position to help. They had staff who were Spanish-speaking, Spanish first, bilingual, and they had a health tech committee. And so they kind of mobilized their staff who were Spanish-speaking and their health tech committee, and we put together a group of people who reviewed the material safety data sheets. And, you know, just to make this a little easier, here I am sitting at the Department of Public Health looking at cleaning products, you know, with the NIOSH funding for this asthma surveillance, even though none of these cases were asthma. It was a kind of an interesting bringing together of resources. So we tried to summarize the hazards. And what the union asked us for is, tell us which of those 20 products are the worst. Tell us which are the bad ones. Give us some help in figuring out how to protect the workers. So I got a chance to even attend a meeting where the workers came into the union office. And I heard them talk about their problems. And they came up with their key demands. They wanted to use the safer products. They wanted no mixing. They wanted training. They wanted no changes without warning. There were no dilution in instructions in Spanish. They wanted instructions that had the picture of the cleaning product with the color so that they can make the right choices and use the right materials. And the union was successful in this case in winning some changes. So this led me to think, well, you know, what were the lessons? Well, first of all those 30 publications were not sufficient to protect the workers. On the other hand, they were really important because that science and technical information allowed us to really come in with a lot of confidence and say something about those cleaning products that I think was able to help the union. So it backed the union in the accuracy and the correctness of their demands. And I think it made their fight stronger. Well, this also impacts me. You know, as we look at our research grants, our surveillance grants, and we have to tell NIOSH, what's your impact? You know, this is the kind of story I want to tell. You know, how do we use surveillance to actually make a difference? And I'm not sure I can fit this into a logic model, but I'm sure going to try. The other thing that was really important is there were champions in a position to help. There was an effective union organizer. There was an effective people at MassCOSH. We had this health tech committee. We had an occupational medicine physician. We had people with PhDs in policy. We had industrial hygienists. And we were able to bring our skills to bear. And what it also kind of pushed me to do is it promoted this idea. We looked at 20 MSDSs. We divided it up between the three of us. It took us hours. We tried to put it into a chart. So it made me actually take more seriously work on things like Green Seal, third-party certification, to help shortcut that, reviewing every MSDS. So I kind of want to acknowledge some of the folks who worked on this. At the bottom you'll see, you know, Isabel and the MassCOSH staff, Neri, oopsie, didn't mean to do that. Neri and the other 615 members who came forward despite, you know, language and other challenges, and Lenore, Robert Naparstek, and the other health tech volunteers who kind of, I thought, brought these different resources together to really make a difference. Thank you. Thank you.